Section 2, The Early Fighting. As you read, look for the effect of the Union Navy blockade on the South, the unusual fate of slaves left behind on the sea islands, the importance of controlling Charleston Harbor, the broader strategy of war and the relative advantages for each side, the effect of the Emancipation Proclamation, terms, total war, blockade, freedmen, casualties, conscripted, ironclad, emancipation, Emancipation Proclamation. The best possibility for the South to triumph and become independent was to win several early battles and kill the will of the Union to resist their secession. The Confederacy won several early battles, but Southern leaders had underestimated the political will and determination of Northern leaders. As the war wore on, it became the first modern total war. A total war involves all the people and resources of a society. It is a test, not just of military strength, but of economic, social, and political systems as well. The Early War in South Carolina. South Carolina was the target of early Union efforts to roll back the rebellion. In November 1861, Federal troops landed at Port Royal and proceeded to capture the Beaufort area and several of the Sea Islands. The Union Navy used the area as a base of operations for its blockade, the use of naval forces to stop shipping, of the east coast of the Confederacy for the remainder of the war. This was an important victory for the Union cause and a thorn in the side of the South. The blockade consisted of hundreds of ships patrolling the coast, trying to prevent shipment of goods in and out of the Confederate states. As Union troops moved into Port Royal and the Sea Islands, the planters moved out. About 10,000 slaves were left behind. They were declared contraband of war and were, in effect, free. The United States government, along with Northern missionaries and philanthropists, began the Port Royal experiment to deal with the people's needs. They hired the former slaves to work the abandoned plantations and eventually sold some pieces of the properties to the workers at favorable rates. The Northerners built and ran schools for the freedmen, the name given to former slaves, who were eager to learn. Some of these schools, including the Penn School on St. Helena Island, lasted for nearly a century. Many of the black men were recruited to serve in the Union Army. Altogether, over 5,000 black soldiers from South Carolina served in the Union Army. Most of South Carolina escaped the military conflict until near the end of the war. However, there were a few actions in the coastal areas. In June 1862, Federal troops tried to establish a position on Charleston Harbor from which they could bombard the city. They were turned back with heavy losses in the Battle of Secessionville on James Island by a much smaller Confederate force. One of the most daring and adventurous actions on the South Carolina coast was the heist, theft, of a Confederate ship, the Planter, from Charleston Harbor in May 1862 by a slave, Robert Smalls. Smalls's master had hired him out as a pilot, so he knew the harbor well. When the white officers were off the ship, Smalls, his family, and the slave crew took over the ship and sailed it out of the harbor. In the open ocean, he returned the ship over to the Union Navy. The Congress granted the crew prize money, and Smalls was commissioned a Union officer and became commander of the Planter, the first black man to serve in this capacity. After the war, Smalls served in the South Carolina legislature and the U.S. Congress. In July 1863, Union forces tried to capture Battery Wagner on Morris Island, which dominated the entrance to Charleston Harbor. Among the leaders of the Union assault was a black regiment, the 54th Massachusetts Volunteer Infantry Regiment. They were driven back with great losses, but their fighting skill and bravery demonstrated to unbelieving Southern whites that black soldiers really could fight. Their heroism was celebrated in the film Glory in 1989. Unable to take the battery by sudden attack, Union troops bombarded the fort for 50 days. Finally, the Confederates were forced to withdraw. For the remainder of the war, Union troops controlled the entrance to the harbor from Morris Island. This put an end to the thriving blockade-running business in Charleston. That business shifted to Wilmington, North Carolina. It also enabled the big Union guns to lob shells into Fort Sumter and into the city. Any part of Charleston south of Calhoun Street was subject to bombardment. Most city activities had to move north of Calhoun until the city surrendered near the end of the war. The broader war. The military strategy of the Confederacy was simply to use their army to defend the South against Union efforts to prevent secession. Fighting on their home turf gave the South the advantage of shorter supply lines, familiar territory, and the psychological benefit of defending the homeland. The disadvantage was that the Confederacy suffered all the physical destruction of the war. The overall military strategy of the Union was 1. To capture the Confederate capital, Richmond, Virginia. 2. To cut the Confederacy in two by taking the Mississippi River Valley, thus isolating Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas. And 3. To blockade the coastline to prevent supplies from pouring into the South. Most of the action on the South Carolina coast related to the blockade. The efforts to capture Richmond resulted in many battles and skirmishes in northern Virginia. Some of these battles involved more soldiers and more casualties, people killed, wounded, captured, and missing, than any other battles in American history up until that time. The first battle of Bull Run, July 21, 1861, shocked both North and South with its huge numbers. Over 60,000 men fought. About 5,000 were casualties. Yet later battles would dwarf those early ones in tragic loss of men. For example, in September 1862, Confederate General Robert E. Lee led an invasion of Maryland in an effort to isolate Washington, D.C. His army was met at Sharpsburg on Antietam Creek by a Union army. In a one-day battle, the two armies, numbering about 125,000 men, lost over 26,000 casualties. In the Battle of Chancellorsville, Virginia, during 3 days of May 1863, nearly 200,000 men fought, suffering 30,000 casualties. In addition to the large battles, there were hundreds of skirmishes, not important to the outcome of war, but hurtful to those involved and to the morale of people in the vicinity. South Carolina's fighting men. South Carolina men volunteered enthusiastically for military duty at first. Many who were reluctant to volunteer were later conscripted, drafted, to serve. They fought in almost all of the campaigns and major battles of the war. They learned that parades and glory were not what war was about. War was about seeing men brutally killed and wounded. It was also about living out of doors in disease-ridden camps, always being too hot or too cold, living in danger, fear, homesickness, and hunger. The hardships caused many men to resist the draft or desert. But many more Carolinians fought valiantly, and some distinguished themselves. Perhaps the most illustrious hero was Wade Hampton III. One of the wealthiest Americans at the beginning of the war, he funded his own Hampton's Legion of Infantry, Cavalry, and Artillery. Before the end of the war, he was a lieutenant general and General Lee's chief cavalry commander. Other prominent Carolinians in the fight were Matthew C. Butler, Ellison Capers, later an Episcopal bishop, and States' Rights Gist. The Union advantage. The Union fared badly in many early battles, but the longer the war lasted, the more the North's advantages began to show. One advantage was a much larger population to support the war effort and from which to draw troops. The Confederacy had about 5,582,000 free citizens. The Union had over four times that number. Another advantage was the greater industrial development of the North. The North produced about 10 times more manufactured goods and 32 times more guns than the South. And the North had 70% of the nation's railroads. Consequently, the Union Army was much better supplied with guns and equipment, boots and clothing, than was the Confederate Army. The Union Navy provided another advantage. Its blockade of the southern states stopped most trade. With little export of cotton, the South was left without its main source of cash. Without importing large quantities of guns, equipment, and clothing, the Confederate Army and the Southern people were almost always short of crucial supplies. The Confederacy started with no navy. Though great efforts were made to turn cargo ships into warships and to transform some vessels to ironclads, armored ships, that could challenge the blockade ships, the Navy of the CSA was never a match for the Navy of the USA. The Hunley. The Confederate Navy experimented with submarines to combat the Union blockade ships. In 1863, they launched a little boat, the David, that was almost a submarine, but it was steam-powered and could not totally submerge. David sailed from Charleston to attack a Goliath-like ironclad ship, the New Ironsides, on blockade duty offshore from Charleston. A long spar, pole, on David's bow, had explosives on the end. David managed to blow a hole in the ship's hull, but it stayed afloat. David continued to harass Union ships, but never succeeded in sinking one. In 1864, the Confederates developed a true submarine, the Hunley. Powered by an 8-man crew cranking its propeller, it sank twice during trials, drowning its crew each time. In its only battle use, it succeeded in ramming its long spar with explosives into the Housatonic, a Union ship outside Charleston Harbor. For the first time in history, a submarine sank a ship, but the Hunley also sank with the loss of yet another crew. The experiment ended for the time being. The fate of the Hunley was symbolic of the ineffectiveness of the Southern Navy in breaking the blockade. No foreign assistance. The Confederate leaders had counted on getting assistance from Europe. They thought European nations would use their navies to break the Union blockade and keep the cotton flowing out of the South and the guns and manufactured goods flowing in. Two developments defeated that plan. The European manufacturers found new sources of cotton in Egypt and India. And Lincoln cleverly used the issue of emancipation, the freeing of slaves, to keep Britain, France, and others from aiding the South. Europeans were strongly opposed to slavery. When Lincoln announced his plan of emancipation, Southern hopes of Europeans helping their cause evaporated. The Emancipation Proclamation. Abraham Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation, a declaration that slaves in rebel territory were to be free, in September 1862. It was to take effect at the beginning of 1863 unless the Southern states gave up their rebellion against the United States. Emancipation was a humanitarian measure, of course, but the President also saw it as a necessary step to win the war. It would deprive the South of aid from Europe, and it would undermine the Southern economy. Contrary to popular opinion today, the Emancipation Proclamation did not destroy slavery directly. It only applied to those states and parts of states still in rebellion against the United States on January 1, 1863. In theory, the Confederacy had one last chance to save slavery by giving up on secession and war. That, of course, was not going to happen. As Union troops advanced into Confederate territory, the slaves of that area were to be legally free. Huge numbers of slaves flocked to the Union armies as they approached. The proclamation transformed the war into a crusade against slavery, in addition to a fight to save the Union, a very big moral advantage for the North. Do you remember? 1. Define in sentence form, blockade, freedmen, casualties. 2. Why was control of Morris Island such a victory for Union forces? 3. What was the Hunley, and what first did it accomplish?